free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
It's Friday, January 31st, 2020. I'm David Knight, your host. We may see the end of the impeachment show. If they don't call more witnesses, they said that they will have a vote today. They said they're going to start at 1 o'clock. And, of course, these are Eastern times. So there'll be a two-hour summary by both sides. At that point, they will have a vote as to whether or not they're going to call more witnesses. So about 5 o'clock Eastern time, they will have a vote. It now looks, since we've had Lamar Alexander, he was one of the people that was being lobbied by Mitt Romney even before the impeachment was finished in the House, lobbied to draw this out, to essentially turn this into a Kavanaugh spectacle. It became clear that Kavanaugh was going to make the had the votes to become confirmed, and so they wanted to try to drag that out. They wanted to try to sully his reputation as well as do it for political purposes, just in general, against President Trump and the Republicans. And I think, as you look at people like Ted Cruz and Lindsey Graham talking about this, and I think this is what all the Republicans understand, it is going to be another Kavanaugh display going on forever. And that's exactly what this is about. It's about a political purpose. It doesn't have any basis in law for impeachment. And I've said that many times. It's kind of interesting. We're going to take a look as well at Rand Paul and the Constitution versus Chief Justice Roberts and the deep state. As he gags him in terms of, saying the name Eric Ciaramella. I pronounce it Eric CIA Ramella because that's where he's coming from. And, Rand Paul made it very clear that just like we saw the connection between Strzok and Page from the FBI to try to take down President Trump in phase one of the smear process, phase two, they go to the National Security Council and they use Eric Ciaramella, who is a colleague of John Brennan, as well as a guy who works with the House Select Permanent Committee on Intelligence. So that was basically shut down by Eric Roberts for no reason. But Rand Paul had some very important things to say about foreign aid. And this is something that I said several weeks ago, of course. Neither Rand Paul nor I like the concept of foreign aid at all. I would cut all of it to everybody. And so when I tweeted, it was funny when I tweeted it, I said, all you need to know are these three steps here. Foreign aid is an entitlement for every country. And we should never be concerned about whether or not they are corrupt or whether or not they're doing what we want them to do. I mean, we ought to basically give foreign aid to everybody. We should give foreign aid to Iran. Oh, wait, the Reagan administration did that, didn't they? They just did it under the table, the Iran-Contra situation. No, we should give it to everybody. No strings attached, right? It's an entitlement. And when I did that, I had all these MAGA people attacking me. They don't understand sarcasm. I said the only crime is to delay to temporarily delay it. We're going to talk today about the many times that Barack Obama did that, that he tied foreign aid to his political agenda, even to getting reelected in some not so subtle ways. And of course, there's the incident there where his vice president was saying, you stopped the investigation of this corrupt country, company. In this corrupt country that is tied to my son, or we're going to withhold billions of dollars of aid to you. We're also going to take a look at Bloomberg and these other Democrats. Bloomberg, as I pointed out, spending $100 million, $10 million more on the Super Bowl ad this weekend to come after guns. At the same time, you have Elizabeth Warren demanding that free speech be criminalized if she doesn't like it. I'm serious. That is what it's now come to. Not just deplatforming, but you're now going to go to jail. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
It's Friday, January 31st, year of our Lord 2020. I'm David Knight, your host. It looks like today may be the last gasp of at least this phase of the Democrats' attempts to overthrow our election and remove President Trump in an election year. It looks like they now have one of the individuals that Mitt Romney has been lobbying for a very long time to try to extend this, as I said at the top of the hour, into another Kavanaugh trial, which is just a long smear process that one of them has now defected, Lamar Alexander. And everybody is saying, well, it looks like this isn't going to happen today. The vote will be about 5 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. And they may go through and have a vote up or down about the entire impeachment after that if they don't decide to call witnesses. But I want to focus right now on the back and forth between Rand Paul and John Roberts, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. Now, he was blocked, still blocked, from asking any questions around the whistleblower, which is at the center of this whole thing, right? We had the quote-unquote whistleblower complaint, and President Trump released a transcript of the phone call right away, released the whistleblower transcript the next day. They broke early in the morning as this program was live. I read these things live, and I said, look at this, the very beginning of the whistleblower complaint. It says he wasn't there. It was based on hearsay evidence, to which, you know, they subsequently, in the star chamber process in the House, they blocked witnesses that would have collaborated President Trump's testimony and so forth. That was all you had to get approval from Adam Schiff. And surprise, he had a lot of people he didn't want to hear from. And now that they realize that they didn't make a case, they want to try to extend this. But it's really, as I said, just a Kavanaugh part due. But going back to November the 5th, Rand Paul, and at that time he had not mentioned the name that shall not be named, Eric CIA Ramella, Eric Chiramella, who was a colleague of John Brennan. He didn't mention that name. But you had this back and forth with Brett Barr back on November the 5th, and Rand Paul. Rand Paul says, there's no law saying that I can't say the guy's name. Let's play that video, video clip number two.
If Congress and others do not protect my client's anonymity, which my client is afforded by the law, not only does it jeopardize their safety, but it jeopardizes an entire system that took decades to build. It will destroy effective congressional oversight.
Pause it right there. Pause it right there. You know, they have the whistleblower's attorney. And even in the Fox News article, they would say the whistleblower's attorney. Well, everybody knows, everybody knew and knows the name of the whistleblower. They know the name of the whistleblower attorney. But they would not say it. And so here's what Rand Paul has to say about that.
You know, I don't wish harm on anyone. I've been the victim of political violence not once but twice. I was there at the ball field when Steve Scalise was almost killed. A staff member was 10 feet from me who was shot. I had six of my ribs broken by a hater of President Trump. So I know what political violence is all about. I don't want that at all. But the report was not correct in the sense that the statute says the inspector general can't reveal the name. It says the president should enforce the law, but the person you quoted was disingenuous in what they were saying. The statute says the inspector general can't reveal the name. There's nothing that prevents me from saying it now. Other than that, I want it to be more about the process and less about the person. But there's no law that prevents me from mentioning the name of who's been said to be the whistleblower. But there's also,
you know?
Yeah. And there's something important also. It's called the Constitution. The Sixth Amendment to the Constitution says, if you are going to accuse me of a crime, I get to stare you down in court. That is absolutely part of the Constitution. The statute might say one thing, but I promise you, if there is a trial, you always get to confront your accuser. It's in the Sixth Amendment. It's in the Bill of Rights. There's no way they can stop the defense.
That's right. And that's what did not happen during the House situation. And, you know, even to this day, I've got an article in front of me here from Fox News yesterday. Justice Roberts blocks Senator Paul, and Senator Paul may force the issue. And in it, they still refer to the whistleblower. The whistleblower, Fox is still afraid of that. Now, Rand Paul has gone on to mention his name openly. I said it, have been saying it from as soon as it was reported. They don't have any liability. We had some individuals go out there with sources. So, you don't have to, they haven't refuted this. They haven't come out and said he's not the whistleblower. They just say, don't shut up. Don't say his name. Nobody has been sued for this. There's been no criminal action because there is no crime. There is no libel in this. And Federalist co-founder Sean Davis, in talking about Roberts blocking Rand Paul from asking questions, and we'll tell you what Rand Paul wanted. He said Roberts is arbitrary and unilateral in his censorship of senators and Senate business. He said Roberts had initially sought to block even general questions of the intelligence community whistleblower. When Republicans threatened to a vote that would rebuke Roberts on the record, Sean Davis reported that Roberts backed down and decided only to prohibit mentioning the whistleblower's name. And Rand Paul was very angry yesterday. During a break, he says, I don't want to have to stand up to try and fight for recognition, but if I have to fight for recognition, I will. They do point out that Mark Zaid, the whistleblower's attorney, Eric CIA Ramelas' attorney, openly admitted back in 2017 that a coup had started against the president from within the administration and that CNN's coverage would play a key role in the effort. He also solicited intelligence community members to help impeach and get rid of Trump years before Trump's call with the Ukraine leader. He also, his attorney, Zaid, also acknowledged the whistleblower had contact with a prominent Democratic presidential contender amid reports that he had served closely with Joe Biden. And so all of this is why Rand Paul wanted to ask the question. Let's play Rand Paul's statement about the timeline, video clip number 3.
Managership and counsel for the president, are you aware that House Intelligence Committee staffer Sean Mitko has a close relationship with Eric Chiaramella when at the National Security Council together? Are you aware, and how do you respond to reports that Chiaramella and Misko may have worked together to plot impeaching the president before there were formal House impeachment proceedings? I think this is an important question, one that deserves to be asked. It makes no reference to anybody who may or may not be a whistleblower. The manager Schiff says he has no knowledge. If he has no knowledge, the rest of us can have no knowledge of who the whistleblower is. The president's team says they have no knowledge of who the whistleblower is. I think it was an incorrect finding to not allow a question that makes no reference. It means that anybody ever said might have been a whistleblower could never be discussed in a proceeding. I think it's very important whether or not a group of Democratic activists, part of the Obama-Biden administration, were working together for years looking for an opportunity to impeach the president. With that, I'll take a few questions. Yes, sir.
Yeah, we don't know. Adam Schiff doesn't know who the whistleblower is, he says. It could be Joe Biden. It could be Hunter Biden. We don't know who is slandering President Trump, right? We're not allowed to ask that question. And so that was the question that he read there at the press conference. You saw the C-SPAN coverage of it. And he went on Twitter. And he said, my question today is about whether or not individuals who are holdovers from the Obama National Security Council and Democrat partisans conspired with Schiff staffers to plot impeaching the president before there were formal House impeachment proceedings. Before the impeachment proceedings. He said, my question is not about a whistleblower, as I have no independent information on his identity. My question is about the actions of known Obama partisans within the NSC and House staff and how they reported to have conspired before impeachment proceedings had even begun. And that's exactly what we're talking about. You know, when I look at all this stuff and all the hand-wringing about how special whistleblowers are, I'm reminded about what the Obama administration did to William Binney and Thomas Drake and the other NSA whistleblowers. I'm reminded about what they did to John Kiriakou, the guy who blew the whistle on torture. They love whistleblowers, don't they? And we should always respect them. And we should get rid of the corruption that they expose, right?
Yeah. Can I get a witness? Can I get a witness? Can I get a witness?
Schiff and Pelosi and the Democrats screaming for witnesses. But it looks like they can't get a witness. Because even though Susan Collins has said that she will vote for more witnesses, and Mitt Romney has been trying to turn this whole process into Kavanaugh part due, Lamar Alexander has now come out. He was one of the group that was being lobbied very hard by Mitt Romney. And he's now come out saying he's not going to vote for extending this indefinitely with witnesses. He said, I worked with other senators to make sure that we have the right to ask for more documents and witnesses, but there is no need for more evidence to prove something that has already been proven and that does not meet the Constitution's high bar for an impeachable offense, he said on Twitter. Now, just a couple of days ago, interestingly enough, we had, get video clip number 10, we had Senator Blumenthal from Connecticut, a Democrat, of course, and it makes it all the more interesting that as he's talking about this and the fact that he's afraid that they weren't going to get the ability to call more witnesses, he actually had a Freudian slip as he was talking about how necessary it was to get witnesses. He actually accidentally admitted that they didn't have a case, and so they need more witnesses. Let's play that clip, video clip number 10.
Do I think Republicans have the votes to stop calling witnesses?
Right, right.
Based on this summation, a fact-free summation filled with innuendo and insinuation, there's no way that the president can continue blocking witnesses with any sort of integrity, and there's no way that my colleagues can continue to be complicit if they fail to hear evidence. What you just saw was a fact-free summation of a case bereft of evidence.
Uh-oh.
We need the evidence. We need the witnesses and documents. They may have the votes at this moment, but I hope my colleagues will look themselves in the mirror and look at how they will be viewed by history and by their constituents.
So that's a problem. You know, somebody, and he ought to know this for a while. He's been a senator for a while. He's been in the public eye for a while. And if you're going to lie about something, and he should know about this because he's a Democrat senator. So if you're going to lie about something, you want to keep it terse. You want to stick to your talking points. If you start monologuing and repeating some of your talking points, like this is a fact-free summation, eventually what you're going to do you're going to let this truth slip out when he says the second time he says a fact-free summation. He says, this is a summation of a case bereft of evidence. We need the evidence. Yeah, you need some evidence, and you don't have it. And, you know, so you got to, you know, you come to come to court and you say, well, you know, I know we've had this case here, but we need to go. I know there's nothing here, and it's bereft of evidence. So we need to go over and call some more stuff out here. Ted Cruz said on Friday, I'm going to vote that we don't need any more witnesses with 17 witnesses in the House. We've heard all the evidence, and the House managers have failed. Lindsey Graham, as he was speaking earlier this week, said the president will be acquitted, I think it will be this week. He went on to address his colleagues in the Senate, telling them that if they think Bolton is the only witness that will be called, they are crazy. He said, to my colleagues, if you think you're going to call just one witness, you are crazy. Yeah, it'll be a Kavanaugh scenario. That's exactly what they're trying to do. And we'll talk about Bolton here in just a second. Lamar Alexander, again, is saying that he's one of the group of four, including Mitt Romney. And Lisa Murkowski is still a question mark. She's still on the fence. She will ultimately decide whether the vote ends in a tie or whether there is a simple majority against witnesses. So that's what we're going to find out this afternoon. Again, they're going to have, starting about 1 o'clock, another 4 hours of watching paint dry. And then after the paint on the wall has dried and the senators put away their fidget spinners, they will have a vote on whether or not call more witnesses, and that will be when it gets interesting. Alexander also took a shot, Lamar Alexander, at what he called, quote, this shallow, hurried, and wholly partisan impeachment. Well, I disagree. I don't think it was hurried. Pelosi said, you cannot be acquitted if you don't have a trial. Well, you know, that's what's been going on for months, Nancy. You had your little trial there in the House, and they've had a presentation and a trial in the Senate for, I don't know, it seems like years. Maybe just a couple of weeks. Republicans need to still figure out what their appetite is in their own conference for finishing things late Friday, writes Politico, or early Saturday, or whether GOP senators will want some more time to deliberate over Trump's fate. I think they want to just kind of move on. And it's always good to have these things finish up on a Friday night. GOP senators confident no new witnesses, and Schumer has conceded that that is going to be likely. Another Republican senator, John Thune, from South Dakota, said, I think the facts are all out there. I don't think that anything that Bolton is going to say changes the facts. Yeah, because, you know, Bolton, Bolton is kind of fact-free. We'll talk about that coming up. Bolton is fact-free, and but he is trying to sell a book, and he is a disgruntled, angry employee, former employee. Impeachment closing arguments are slated to begin this afternoon, as I said. About 5 o'clock, they'll have the vote. Nancy Pelosi is very, very angry. He will not be acquitted. He will not be acquitted. she is not going to ever admit it. If you don't have a trial, you don't have witnesses and documentation. And, you know, that's basically what we said, Nancy, during the little show trial that you had with Adam Schiff in the House, that it was a star chamber process. If you don't have witnesses, you don't have documents. I mean, the key complaint in this begins by saying, well, I heard from other people that type of thing. Look, that's hearsay evidence. Why was that even something that was discussed? People who were direct witnesses to this were not involved that could have refuted that in many cases. It was very carefully controlled. Pelosi accused Republicans of trying to dismantle the Constitution. She said some of them are even lawyers, you know, kind of like the House Democrats, Pelosi and Schiff, who have absolutely no respect for the rules of evidence or being able to call witnesses in your defense. They don't care about that. She said, I don't think they made the case. Well, that's everybody's judgment about your presentation in both the House and in the Senate. And that brings us then to Mitt Romney. As The Hill points out, there is a competition between Mitt Romney and McConnell, calling them two leaders. I don't think that really is the case. Certainly Mitt Romney is trying to organize his own little mutiny here with those other senators. But he is not really a leader, as the headline that you'll see on the Drudge Report says, Mitt Romney, a man alone. He doesn't have any. He doesn't even have 4 people following him now. He's got 1, Susan Collins, following him. Possibly Lisa Murkowski, but maybe not even her. So how does that make you a Republican leader, Mitt? You even have somebody in Utah introducing a bill to recall.
Of deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
As I was saying, we went to break. Mitt Romney is a man alone, even to the extent that a Utah State Representative, Ken Quinn, has introduced a bill into the state legislature that would allow voters to recall U.S. senators. We don't have any U.S. senator in mind in particular, he said. He says, I know everybody's going to think that it's Mitt Romney. He goes, if it were, then it might make sense to have a sunset on it. But that would not be the case. He said, I think 6 years is a long time. Yeah, it is a long time to have to suffer through Mitt Romney because he just got elected recently. That's kind of where Mitt Romney stands. And again, at this point, with Lamar Alexander, he was lobbying Lamar Alexander, Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, Mitt Romney. Like the 4 of us, we can have a call for witnesses and we can stretch this out through the whole election season. You know, we can have a, a Kavanaugh-style Trump slander hearing throughout the entire campaign process. There's a lot of Democrats, I think, who don't want that. A lot of Republican attorneys general were saying, we don't want this, but, you know, Mitt does. Yeah, Mitt was humiliated. And I got to say that that has been one of the problems with President Trump. He doesn't just get rid of the deadwood and the bad employees that he shouldn't have put in the first place, like John Bolton. But he taunts the Boltons and the Romneys to the point that they are just insane. Just insane. And so, you know, it'd be a good thing if he didn't do that. But that apparently is part of his personality. He can't help himself from doing that. Nevertheless, it doesn't excuse what Mitt Romney is doing. And it doesn't make him any less petty, vindictive, and self-interested in what he is doing. So now as it stands, he's lost Lamar Alexander. Politico might like to present Mitt Romney, since he was chosen by the establishment to run for president because they knew that he would put Obamacare through. He had already done Romney Care with Ted Kennedy in Massachusetts, and so he was reliable. He and Paul Ryan, that's why they were chosen for these positions. You know, Paul Ryan, his running mate, and then Paul Ryan became the House Speaker because they were going to make sure that Obamacare got in, that Paul Ryan as House Speaker was going to make sure that Obamacare didn't get taken out and nothing was going to be done about the border either, funding the wall. That's why they put these people in. You got to get past the point you just look at what political party people are in. Having an R after their name doesn't mean that they want limited government or the Constitution or anything else. Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan are exhibits A and B. And, they chose him because he is part of the deep state. And that's why he is now opposing President Trump, because he is part of the deep state and because of the bitter personal animosity that he has. So he thought that he could take some liberal Republicans, Lamar Alexander, Susan Collins, and Lisa Murkowski. Now he can only get at best 50 votes because now Susan Collins has said, yeah, I'll do it, because she's been pressured a great deal by George Conway, Kellyanne Conway's husband, and Jennifer Horne, who started the Lincoln Project. Jennifer Horne out of New Hampshire, a radical LGBT Republican. She left the log cabin Republicans because they said, look, let's leave Trump alone. He's fine with gay marriage. We wanted the Supreme Court. Let's just leave it alone. No. We've got to shut down any religious talk about people having a conversion experience. We got to criminalize that. She tried to criminalize that in New Hampshire, because the New Hampshire Republicans would not criminalize it. She got out. And now she and these other radical, anti-free speech, anti-free expression of religion Republicans are now part of the Lincoln Project. And they targeted not only President Trump, but, of course, Susan Collins was a key part of that. And so they made it very clear that they were going to run all kinds of ads against Susan Collins in election year if she did not say she was going to vote for more witnesses. And so they got her. And so then that leaves Lisa Murkowski. If she follows Mitt Romney into oblivion, that will mean that it is 50-50. And then I guess Roberts gets to vote. The thing is, I don't understand why, when you have a tie in the House, why you don't have the vice president voting. Because that's typically what happens when the Senate has a tie. That's why the vice president is the president of the Senate pro tem. We're going to have Richard Proctor on talking about the Constitution in the last hour. I guess I'll ask him about that. It doesn't really matter what the Constitution says, though, right? It's what the Supreme Court justice says. When he explains that to us, then maybe he can explain how he wrote both opinions on Obamacare, both agreeing that it should be, that it's constitutional, and disagreeing that it should be constitutional. And then he went with the one where he said it should be constitutional because it's a tax. And now that it's no longer a tax, and that argument has fallen apart, the question is, are they going to take it away? And then after he explains that, he could explain to us how they have the power to define what marriage is, because they don't have that either. Let's talk about foreign aid, though, because that really is the center point of this whole impeachment process. As I said a couple of weeks ago, and I tweeted it out, I had a lot of MAGA people get angry with me because I said, well, you understand, foreign aid is an entitlement, right? Sarcastically. But that's essentially what the Democrats are saying. Foreign aid is an entitlement. It's impeachable if you even delay it. And, of course, Democrats can never commit a crime. The only crime is to investigate their crimes. Rand Paul, as part of this, is ripping foreign aid recipients. He said, why are we talking about this? Most of the foreign aid recipients are crooks, and they've stolen it. He said, presidents have the latitude to withhold funding, and several have. As a matter of fact, it was Obama who delayed aid to Ukraine, and we saw that on videotape with Biden bragging about it. But I've got a long list of other times that Obama did that. He said, do presidents have the latitude to play games with foreign aid? Sure. I think the whole point is that aid is supposed to be conditional. We want something if we give them money. I don't want to give them money anyway, because I don't think we have the money to give, nor do I think anywhere in the Constitution is it authorized to give foreign aid. Exactly. Exactly. So I'm proud of him withholding aid anytime he can. That's what I said before. It's like if you want to impeach President Trump for something about foreign aid with Ukraine, impeach him for giving it. I mean, that's what you ought to be looking at. It's not an entitlement. I was being sarcastic when I put that out, if you couldn't understand that. And if you're going to give money to people, certainly coming from the federal government, I've said this over and over again, I said, don't take any money from the government at any level because there's always strings attached to it. I said this many times to homeschoolers in my home state. I said, you want them to give you funding for sports and band and extracurricular activities and everything? You understand that there's going to be strings attached to that? Tell them to take their money and put it where the sun doesn't shine, because when they give you free stuff, they take away your freedom all the time. But we don't do that with foreign governments, do we? Oh, well, yeah, Obama did. Obama did. We should all be very wary, says Rand Paul, of giving them money. It's true of foreign aid in particular. I don't want to say that all Ukrainians are crooks. Most people in foreign governments who receive our money, or a lot of them, are crooks and have stolen it. They skim it off the top. They're thieves, kind of like the people in Washington. The most corrupt people in the world get the most foreign aid. Absolutely right. You know, when we talk about how, is foreign aid vital to our security? Just understand that when they say security, they mean continuity of government. They mean the national security totalitarian state. It is vital to them to have these kind of foreign aid entitlements. But when you hear security, you think the safety of we the people. Could not, that's not what they're talking about. They're talking about continuity of government. They're talking about the national security state itself when they talk about national security, not your security. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. You know, I was talking about foreign aid. Rand Paul pointing out how corrupt it is. And let's go back to December of last year, just about 2 months ago. Five times Obama put conditions on foreign aid and Democrats didn't care. This is from PJ Media at the time. Colombia. Despite years of giving Colombia military and economic aid, in 2016, Obama made that aid conditional on the Colombian government negotiating a peace treaty with the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia. They call them FARC, a terror group backed by Fidel Castro. FARC slaughtered and tortured hundreds of thousands of civilians, pumped unfathomable amounts of cocaine in the United States, kidnapped and raped children, and much more. Well, that was the assessment of the State Department. Yet, thanks to Obama's pressure, nearly half a billion in American taxpayer dollars went towards putting FARC terrorists into the Colombian government without ever having to be without ever having to account for their crimes. And nobody in the Democrat Party asked what the FARC was going on in Colombia and Nigeria. You had Obama threatening to cut off aid to Nigeria because of anti-gay legislation. Now, at the time he did this in 2011, he was still not open about supporting gay marriage. And he was getting a lot of heat for that. And so this was virtue signaling with political personal gain to the LGBT groups in terms of threatening to cut off aid to Nigeria if they did not get rid of their anti-gay legislation. And again, he made the conditions for aid with Nigeria in 2013 over corruption issues. So he did it twice to Nigeria. In Uganda, same situation. In 2014, homosexuality was illegal in Uganda, but anti-gay legislation being considered in the country at the time would have imposed even harsher sentences for those convicted of homosexual acts. The Ugandan president said he was going to sign it. Obama responded by saying that it would, quote, complicate our valued relationship with Uganda if he did. And he made aid to the country contingent on it. And when they signed that legislation in June 2014, Obama cut aid to Uganda, imposed visa restrictions. That was a travel ban. Ooh. And canceled a regional military exercise. Israel, of course, a lot of conflicts between Obama and Israel. And so he put aid on a series of military aid packages to Israel before giving it to them. And he did that in terms of military aid to Israel. And, of course, we know what happened in Ukraine because we got video of Joe Biden talking about that. But it's not even just those five incidents. And actually it'd be six if you count the two times that he threatened aid to Uganda. Once because of homosexual laws, the other time because of corruption issues. But then again, in 2018, in July of 2018, the Obama administration had been withholding money from nations if they did not fund abortion. You know, we have the Mexico City rule that began with Ronald Reagan saying, we're not going to give money to other countries for them to conduct abortions, right? Still give them foreign aid. No, everybody, but we're not going to give them directly money to fund abortions. Well, Obama kind of went the other way. He says, if you don't fund abortions, we're going to cut money from you. And in July of 2018, Mick Mulvaney, who was then director of the office of OMB, said, it is stunning to me that my government, under a previous administration, we go to folks in sub-Saharan Africa and say, we know that you have a law against abortion, but if you enforce that law, you're not going to get any of our money. And he described that as a form of religious persecution. So this is something that has been done by Obama, by presidents, that they have the authority to do that. If you don't like the president doing that type of thing, you have elections for that purpose, right? But that is something that is within their power. The foreign aid, actually, though, as Rand Paul pointed out, they have the power to conduct foreign policy, but they do not have the power to give money to these foreign countries, in my opinion, and in the opinion of Rand Paul. But we don't ever question that, and you should never question that. And if the money is delayed by a Republican, then that's an impeachable offense. But if the money is delayed or cut off or has other kinds of strings attached to it by Obama or anybody else, it's not a problem. James Bovard talked about this. He said, this is the biggest absurdity of the whole impeachment process. He says it's our toxic fixation on useless and corrupting aid to Ukraine. And he goes on to say, they've devoted all of this time and looking at the timing of the aid to Ukraine, but never looking at the effectiveness of it. And it goes back to a 2002 American Economic Review. They summed it up by saying corruption is positively correlated with aid received from the United States. When George W. Bush was president, he said, I think it makes no sense to give aid money to countries that are corrupt. When Obama was president, he recognized when he was speaking to the UN in 2010, that U.S. aid efforts had been a failure. they had failed to produce the desired effects for the national security state. And that has, again, nothing to do with the security of we the people. He said the U.S. government is, quote, leading a global effort to combat corruption. Oh, but we're not supposed to do that now. The following year, congressional Republicans sought to restrict foreign aid to fraud-ridden foreign regimes, writes James Bovard. Then Secretary of State, however, Hillary Clinton, wailed that restricting handouts to nations that fail anti-corruption tests, quote, has the potential to affect a staggering number of needy aid recipients, you know, like the people in her Clinton Foundation. Because what goes around comes around. It's a little kickback that comes in the Clinton Foundation. You saw their donations plummet to zero after she lost any kind of political power that she could throw around to people. The Obama administration poured tens of billions of U.S. tax dollars into sinkholes like Afghanistan, says Bovard. Even its president, Ashraf Ghani, admitted in 2016 that it was, quote, one of the most corrupt countries on earth. The Special Inspector General for Afghan Restructuring said, quote, U.S. policies and practices unintentionally aided and abetted corruption in Afghanistan. Wall Street Journal reported in October 31 that the IMF had provided more than $20 billion in loans to Ukraine, and yet it remains skeptical after a history of broken promises from the Ukrainian government. Kiev hasn't successfully completed any of a series of IMF bailout packages over the past two decades, with systemic corruption at the heart of much of that failure. So, you know, when we look at this, Ukraine has an even lower ranking in terms of corruption from a group, Transparency International, that does this. They publish an annual index. They call it Corruption Perceptions. Ukraine is ranked even lower than Egypt and Pakistan. But, of course, we give them a lot of aid as well. And then, finally, in this article, James Bovard talks about Jim Rogers, who had an excellent book. I remember reading this book, Investment Biker. He goes around the world on a motorbike. He's up close in all these different areas. And his observation was, he said, most foreign aid winds up with outside consultants, the local military, corrupt bureaucrats, the new NGO, non-governmental organizations, administrators, and with Mercedes dealers. That's exactly what happens with foreign aid. It is just simply feeding corruption abroad and feeding corruption at home to people like Hillary Clinton and her Clinton Foundation. But we should not even delay it, say the Democrats. All right, we got to take a break. Before we do, real quickly, I want to tell you about the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. Been talking about how vital it is to make sure to prepare for the worst case. And that's why we have a lot of people are buying storable food right now. Patriot Supply, my Patriot Supply, is our supplier of this, and they've told us that they're going to be running out of food within the next few weeks. They said people need to order now if you want to get your storable food within 7 to 10 days. And certainly, folks, if this is not the big one, there are going to be times that you're going to need storable food. It could be a natural disaster. It could be a man-made disaster. It could be a false flag so they can run out draconian quarantine. You never know what's going to be there. But, of course, this food is good for 25 years. It is non-GMO, made in America, the best packaging you're going to find anywhere. You can find that at InfoWarsStore.com. With our emergency survival foods, always prepare for the worst case. And when you buy this stuff, you are prepared for 25 years. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Making sense common again. This is The David Knight Show.
Well, Elizabeth Warren has done it. She is now, as she becomes more and more strident and hectoring and totalitarian, authoritarian in every aspect of our life. Now she is calling for criminalizing, not just censorship, but criminalizing speech online if she thinks that it's false, that it's disinformation. And, of course, that is subjective, isn't it? So this is where we wind up after they have made the greatest crime that they can imagine hate speech. Again, that is subjectively determined, isn't it? Haven't we seen that? And of course, they have used hate speech to push their justification for censorship of free speech. If they believe that what you're saying is hateful and racist, and again, anybody that disagrees with them is not only racist, but they're part of a vast Russian conspiracy, then it's a very, very small leap, isn't it, to say that this online disinformation that they claim is now a criminal offense? And she's gone there. She's gone there. Just think about this, because, you know, what we see as we look at Michael Bloomberg, who Matt Drudge has said he's got some advanced knowledge of the Bloomberg campaign releasing their FEC report in a filing today in terms of how much they're going to be have spent. He says it's over $100 million. I've seen other reports of that as well. I've talked about that, how much money that is. When we stop and think about how early we are in this whole election year process, we haven't even had the Iowa caucuses yet. And he has already spent more than $100 million. He has already spent more than was spent in 1996 by both presidential candidates and by both political parties. If you look at the combined spending of the Republican National Committee, the Democrat National Committee, the RNC and the DNC, and Clinton and his opponent at the time, Bob Dole, that was $100 million. And then in 2000, it was just slightly more than that. And here we are. We've got one candidate spending $100 million before the very first Iowa caucus. And he's very proud of that. He thinks that that is his biggest strength, that these people can ban your speech, even being able to retweet President Trump, that's going to be banned by these people. Because they're shadow banning you. I told my wife just last night, I said, you know, Twitter really doesn't have that much value to me at all anymore. In the early days, I would look at it and say, well, you know, there's certain people that I'm interested in what they have to say, or news organizations or whatever, whether I agree with them or disagree with them. You know, I follow Hillary Clinton. But I don't see in my feed, when I go to the feed, I see a bunch of people that I don't follow. I had them suggest to me, I tweeted about it. They suggested that I follow the NSA. And so I retweeted that and I said, well, why not? Because they're following me, just not on Twitter necessarily. And of course, they're following you as well. We'll be talking about that as well. But look, it's become so rigged and so dishonest that even when you say, look, I'm interested in what this person has to say, and I know that's what's happening with people who follow me. They tell me all the time, I don't see your stuff anymore. My wife, and I've mentioned this before, Twitter suggested that she follow AOC. Now, that is not the product of an algorithm. That's the product of political bias, because if they looked at what my wife talks about, that as a matter of fact, she was retweeting me, so they suggested to her that maybe she might want to turn off notifications from me, and then suggested that she follow AOC. Again, that is not a political analysis by their algorithm. That is just trying to impose their speech on us. When we come back, we're going to play for you the one-minute Super Bowl ad that Mike Bloomberg is going to spend $10 million on, that one ad, to take away your guns. To take away your guns. We'll be right back. Stay with us. There's a new way to show your support for the InfoWars crew at InfoWarsStore.com. Now, when you buy your favorite products, you can add a donation right at the checkout. Simply open the donation option and either select a preset amount or enter a custom amount. With this brand new donation module, donating to support the InfoWars crew has never been easier. You asked, we delivered. This easy option gives you the means to donate directly to the cause. Remember, we're all part of the fight. InfoWars, brought to you by you.
Deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. I think we need to stop calling the Democrats a political party. We need to understand that they're not progressive. That's the name that they've chosen for themselves. There is no progress in this. They're progressively more authoritarian, and they're progressively more totalitarian, which is authoritarian in every detail of our life, centralizing all power without any restrictions and controlling us in every detail of our lives. And we can see this from Elizabeth Warren wanting to criminalize online speech. If she thinks that it was disinformation, she judges that, just like they judge that you are a racist, just like they judge that you are guilty of hate. So therefore, you ought to be purged. But now you should be locked up. No, Elizabeth Warren should be locked up. She is a very, very dangerous, hectoring demagogue. But she's not really that much different from the rest of the people in the Democrat Party. And now we've got Michael Bloomberg. He's going to spend $10 million on a Super Bowl ad to try to take away your freedom to defend yourself, which he absolutely hates. And he is saying this is just a down payment. Again, he's already spent more than the combined presidential campaigns in 1996 and 2000. Not only both presidential candidates, but both political parties. You take all four of those entities combined, and Bloomberg has already spent more money than that just before we have the first Iowa caucus, first primary type of thing. Let's play this ad that's going to run on the Super Bowl, video clip number 7.
George started playing football when he was 4 years old. He would wake up every Saturday ready for the game. That became our life. He had aspirations about going to the NFL. On a Friday morning, George was shot. George didn't survive. I just kept saying, you cannot tell me that the child that I gave birth to is no longer here. Lives are being lost every day. It is a national crisis. I heard Mike Bloomberg speak. He's been in this fight for so long, he heard mothers crying, so he started fighting. When I heard Michael was stepping into the ring, I thought, now we have a dog in the fight. I know Mike is not afraid of the gun lobby. They're scared of him, and they should be. Mike's fighting for every child because you have a right to live. No one has a right to take your hopes and dreams.
I'm Mike Bloomberg, and I approve this message.
Okay, well, you know, you could do that about any subject, couldn't you? When President Trump pointed that out about illegal aliens, when he would talk about somebody who was killed by a drunk driver who was an illegal alien, or about, was it Kate Steinle, I think was her name, in San Francisco, an illegal alien who took a gun out of a police officer's car. I mean, he didn't buy it. You know, he stole it from a cop. And then he shot her and killed her. You know, it's a tragedy when anybody dies. And so you can make a tear-jerking statement about that. Now, at the time that that happened, the mother, whose 20-year-old son, George, was shot and killed in 2013. The Houston Chronicle reported that he was shot around midnight after allegedly pulling into a Richmond, Texas neighborhood, calling out an individual on his cell phone and challenging the other guy to a fight. And the guy showed up to a fight with a gun. He showed up without a gun. But it's not even the same type of thing that we saw with people who've been killed by drunk drivers, illegal aliens, people who've been shot by illegal aliens. And yet, if you talk about those tragic stories, oh, the left gets furious. They call you, by the way, don't they call you racist? I think, yeah, racist. They call you hateful. They say you're demagoguing. But, oh, of course, Michael Bloomberg is not demagoguing. To talk about how a 20-year-old who is roaming the streets looking for fights at midnight gets shot. I'm not saying he was deserved to be shot. I'm just saying he was not an innocent bystander exactly either. And I thought it was interesting, perhaps what President Trump should do in response to this woman saying, oh, yeah, Michael Bloomberg, he's been pushing gun control for a long time. When I heard he's getting into the race, I said, now we got a dog in the fight. Got a dog in the fight. Well, Michael Bloomberg doesn't really know what to do with dogs, does he? maybe she should explain the metaphor of a dog to Michael Bloomberg, since he's obviously never met one before this week when he grabbed it by the mouth and started shaking its head. had a mouth open because it's happy. And I've never seen anybody do anything like that before. Like I said, I can't wait to see what he does when he sees his first baby. We have, of course, if he has his way, there won't be any babies for him to meet because he's part of this Planned Parenthood group that wants to get rid of the babies as well as our free speech. In New York, the governor of New York, Cuomo, is now coming up with new gun control legislation that would require all gun owners in New York to get mental health evaluations. See, it's not enough to have a red flag. Anybody can, finger you and say, this person is crazy, they're dangerous. Okay, well, we'll take away their gun on accusation. Well, as I've said before, if you are dangerous as an individual, you're still going to be dangerous if somebody takes your gun away because you can still walk up and hit somebody in the back of the head with a hatchet, right? You can get many tools to kill people with. The gun is not the only tool that you can kill somebody with. They'd leave the dangerous person on the street, but they'd get the gun away because all they want to do is have a reason to get the gun away. And if you give a false indication about somebody, that can, it's like SWAT teaming somebody. That's a very dangerous thing. Many people have been killed because of false accusations and a SWAT team showing up. Sometimes it's been the SWAT team, but usually it's the person that gets swatted that gets killed. And so now they're not going to do that. They're going to take the next step with a red flag. They're going to say, well, you got to prove that you're sane. Because, if you want guns, you're, to the Democrats, you're obviously insane, right? Just like if you disagree with them on any issue, you are obviously racist. You're obviously hateful. Well, if you want a gun, you are obviously insane. That's the way this is going to run. Forget about this whole thing about innocent until proven guilty. No. They've turned that upside down and on its head for a long time. The government always considers everybody now anymore to be guilty until proven innocent. It used to be that was only the IRS. Now all of these regulatory agencies are doing it. Which brings us back to the people who say that they want to decide whether or not you should be allowed to speak online. As I was talking about my wife, Twitter sees that she's retweeting my stuff. It's like, you should stop getting notifications from David Knight. And you should follow AOC. And since she didn't do that, they unfollowed her from me. And then they unfollowed me from Rob Dew and on. So that's the way this works. And then they make sure that the people that you still want to follow, you don't see their newsfeed. But of course, you can see all of the ads of Mike Bloomberg. I don't watch television, but when I get online, I am getting served his ads everywhere, everywhere. It's absolutely amazing. He has saturated the online sphere with his ads. The politicians, however, are very afraid of you. They're very afraid of your speech. We've seen this. We've had a Democrat in Virginia, a delegate, Jeffrey Bourne, HB 1627, and I reported on this last week, criminalizing criticism of government officials. And Zero Hedge says, are Virginia politicians really so fragile that they'll pass a bill making it illegal to criticize? Yes, they are. As a matter of fact, their narratives are so fragile that you have Adam Schiff demanding that Google and Facebook censor any discussion of health effects by vaccines. There was a lawsuit brought by physicians January the 15th about that. And then we have another Democrat congresswoman demanding that Google and YouTube, of course, and Facebook censor anybody who disagrees with them over climate. And now you've got Elizabeth Warren who wants to send you to jail if you disagree with them over vaccines or over climate. Now they say more censorship will solve everything. We're just too divided in this country. We got to shut down anybody that disagrees with me. That's exactly what we're talking about. Yeah, they'll spend unlimited amounts of money because, so much power is in Washington that everybody is paying them off. That's the real corruption they don't want you to look at. Yeah. Forget about Ukraine. Yeah, they don't want you looking at Ukraine because they're making money out of that as well. But they don't want you to see the corruption that is happening in Washington. We're infinitely more corrupt than Ukraine. That's the real story here, folks. And now we have Elizabeth Warren calling for criminalization of anything that she determines to be disinformation. Isn't that nice? Just like Adam Schiff wants people who are talking about adverse effects of vaccines and how they are ineffective, he wants them purged off of the internet, demanding that Google and YouTube and Facebook do that. And as a result, you've had an association of physicians who have sued him for that. And then as that is happening, as I point out, another Democrat congresswoman has said that she wants Google and YouTube and Facebook to do the same to anybody who is talking about climate and disagrees with her projections. They call them deniers, not skeptics. You know, if you disagree with somebody's models or their data or their conclusions, that is scientific skepticism. If you disagree with their climate change religion, they call you a denier, an infidel. They should just call us climate infidels. I'll go with that label. I don't support your religion, and so they want to purge you. That's why, by the way, the First Amendment protects both political speech, free speech, and free press, and the expression of religion. It's all in there. Warren said she called for civil and criminal penalties for, quote, knowingly disseminating false information about when and how to vote in U.S. elections. And she wants to do this to fight digital disinformation, she said. And when I look at this, I'm kind of wondering, will this finally get the GOP and President Trump to pay attention to online censorship? Now that they have staked out that this is their position, maybe, you know, they could look at this and say, well, you know, the Democrats as a group are as invested in completely purging all speech that they don't like off of the internet. So, you know, we could take the opposite side. There's a constituency out there that would support that. I don't know. Well, will that put a backbone in President Trump and the GOP to finally oppose online censorship? We'll wait and see. She also called for, quote, a summit of countries to enhance information sharing, as if they're not already sharing information, and coordinate policy responses, as if that isn't happening, for disinformation. Well, they are coordinating their disinformation campaigns, aren't they? They're already doing that, Elizabeth, but I know you want the other kind. Additional sanctions against countries that engage in election interference through disinformation. And as Timothy Carney points out, he says, yeah, you should be afraid of Elizabeth Warren, the censor. When she releases this plan, it really goes further than just election interference and disinformation. It is very subjective. But her criminal penalties and criminalizing speech, not just censoring it, that's the next level. And you understand that when they say, well, we're just going to criminalize and censor political speech. That was really the core issue behind the First Amendment. It really wasn't there so that you could, put a crucifix in a vat of urine, all right, and get federal funding for that. No, it really was about making sure that you could say things that people in power didn't want you to say, questioning their narrative, questioning their policies. Oh, that's disinformation now. Criminal penalties for people who knowingly spread false information, she said, about when and how to vote in U.S. elections. But if you look at the study that she cites, it gets to be really concerning, says Carney. One example of voter suppression condemned by the study that she linked to says, quote, the night before election day, ads appeared urging people to boycott the election because neither of the presidential candidates would serve black voters. You see that? Is that disinformation or is that a political opinion? You know, people have said this all along. You know, I don't like any of the candidates here, so we're going to boycott the election. That's not disinformation. That's simply expressing a political opinion. You may not agree with that, but that is not any kind of deception. That's just a call for action. And that study that she uses to support her call for criminalizing disinformation about elections thinks that should be a crime. And he goes on to say, so if Warren becomes our president and she runs for re-election, imagine a GOP-affiliated super PAC running an ad in black neighborhoods saying, Warren says she's good for African Americans, but she isn't. Oh, well, that would be disinformation, says Elizabeth Warren. I disagree with what you had to say, so I'm sending you to jail. That is the hallmark of tyranny, of totalitarianism. It is the very essence of why we have the First Amendment. And I tell you, Elizabeth Warren is not alone. It's Adam Schiff. It's a Democrat congresswoman. It's all these people, Virginia people, saying you cannot criticize an elected official. And they had a whole list. You know, the governor, lieutenant governor, the attorney general, anybody in the House or the Senate and so forth. You can't criticize any of those people, even the people who have just been elected and are, you know, the governor-elect. You don't criticize any of these politicians in Virginia, according to the Democrats. Are you going to have some consequences for that, criminalizing that? The Warren administration might decide that this ad was not a bona fide ad in order to win votes for the GOP, but to discourage votes for Warren. And so would she jail the head of the super PAC? Would she jail the people who had given money to the super PAC? Yes, quite frankly, she would. And we look at how this is spreading, the censorship. I am still amazed at not only the silence from the Republican establishment, President Trump, but I am amazed at how conservative and libertarian think tanks, the biggest conservative think tank, the Heritage Foundation, and the biggest libertarian think tank, the Cato Institute, how they applaud censorship by the internet censors, the people in Silicon Valley, the Silicon censors. They applaud that and say, yeah, that's free enterprise at work. No, it isn't. That's tyranny at work. It's fascism at work because it is an alliance of these people with the government itself, the combination of government and corporations, that is fascism. And they are stealing your God-given rights. My rights don't come from government. My rights don't exist only if a big corporation or some billionaire like Bloomberg or Bezos think that I should be allowed to have that. No. They come from God. I have certain things that I possess as a human that are more important than the bank account of Jeff Bezos or Bloomberg. You know, Bezos, in 15 minutes, you saw the article, right, on Drudge Report. 15 minutes, his fortune went up by $13.2 billion. That's about $1 billion a minute. And, you know, that .2, that 13.2, that .2 is what he paid for the Washington Post. That's their free speech, isn't it? Your free speech, no. You don't have any value. Say even the conservative and libertarian think tanks. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Plant the seed in our home, and boys, let it grow where all can see. Feed it with our devotion, boys. Call it the Liberty Tree. It's a tall
Liberty
tree.
It's your move. You're listening to the David Knight Show.
We are the sons of liberty. Save it from the storm.
Yeah, you know, isn't it amazing that even though we see censorship becoming a essentially a business plan for the Democrat Party and the elites, anybody that they disagree with or they don't like, they'll censor you over anything. They'll censor you over your pro-life issues. They'll censor you over questioning what they say about vaccines or what they say about their climate models and studies. And now Elizabeth Warren, the woman who has lied the most and been caught the most time, absolutely shameless in all this. I mean, it's not just the lying about being a Native American and using that to get preferential treatment here in Texas at the bar, in a position at Harvard and so forth, and that's all come out. Eventually, the documents all came out about that. She lied about her son attending public school when it turns out he attended very elite private schools. That information has come out. She claimed that she was fired for being pregnant and so forth. Then the resignation letter surfaced where she resigned. And she wants to make it a crime if she determines that what you say is false. So you're going to have a liar going to dictate to you what is true with a penalty of jail. Absolutely amazing, isn't it, what has happened to politics in this country? The UK's Guardian. Again, the Guardian has become a reliable handmaid of the globalists, if they weren't always. And now, even though they get 40% of their revenue from advertising, and even though if you ever do go to the Guardian, you will see pleas from them about, please, you know, support us directly and so forth, they still get 40% of their money from ads, but they've determined that they're going to censor and ban all ads from anybody that has an oil or gas firm, anybody in the petroleum industry, because they're doubling down on the climate myth. Now, that's their choice. If they don't want to do that, that's fine. But it's just another example of how the elitists want to control your speech. You know, Guardian does not own the news media in the same way that Facebook and Twitter and YouTube own what's going on in the digital public square and social media. They do have a control of that, and they have said over and over again in testimony that it is a town hall. That is their business model, a town hall where you're supposed to be able to speak freely. But that's not what The Guardian is about. The Guardian is about publishing their take on certain things, and they are perfectly, I'm perfectly fine with them not running any ads from oil and gas firms, but just another example of how they're going to monolithically push one idea. They're not going to tell you, not going to debate anything. They're just going to purge it. And this is where the left is. This is where their mentality is. But it gets even more dangerous when you look at somebody like Elizabeth Warren. Let's get video clip number 9 ready. You know, going back to 1987, a Daily Caller pulled up Joe Biden getting called out about lying and plagiarizing at the time. And they said it was so bad back then that it almost tanked his Senate career. And he was running for president back then. I wonder if Elizabeth Warren would send Joe Biden to jail. Maybe that's what she's laying the trap for, right? Sure it is. It wouldn't be her fellow Democrats, but she would want to send anybody who's Republican for sure to jail. But let's go back and run a little bit of that report going back to 1987. This is Joe Biden in 1987.
Democratic presidential candidate Joseph Biden today faces a controversy. 3 weeks ago at a debate at the Iowa State Fair, he used phrases identical to those delivered by British Labour Party leader Neil Kinnock.
Biden seemed to be claiming Kinnock's vision and life as his own.
Why is it that my wife is sitting out there in the audience is the first in her family to ever go to college?
Why is Gladys the first woman in her family in a thousand generations to be able to get the university?
My ancestors who worked in the coal mines in northeast Pennsylvania and come up after 12 hours and play football.
8 hours underground and then come up and play football.
It's because they didn't have a platform upon which to stand.
There was no platform upon which they could stand.
The notion that every thought or notion or idea you'd have to go back and find and attribute to someone, I think is, quite frankly, ludicrous.
The problem here is that Senator Biden told his audience he'd just been thinking about these things, and he failed to give any credit at all to his famous British speechwriter.
You know, I was thinking on the way over here. Now, that's a little too much, because, as you point out, what's behind the words? What's there? And a lot of people, the rap on Biden has always been that it's just a surface.
I should have said, to paraphrase Neil Kinnock, it's the only time I didn't, in all the times I've ever used it.
But CBS News found a tape of a second instance.
It reappeared in the New York Times with a new charge, that Biden had appropriated a famous litany from the late Robert Kennedy about what the gross national product cannot measure.
It cannot measure the health of our children.
The health of our children.
The quality of our education.
The quality of their education.
The joy of their play.
For the joy of their play.
Biden gave Kennedy no credit. He has also quoted or paraphrased John Kennedy, Hubert Humphrey, and British Labour Party leader Neil Kinnock, all without credit.
Joseph Biden admitted today that he committed plagiarism when he was in law school. He said it was a mistake, but that it was unintentional.
He quoted 5 pages of someone else's work without proper citation.
I've done some dumb things, and I'll do dumb things again.
He was given an F.
So, ladies and gentlemen, I've been dumb.
Yeah. And got to give him credit. At least in 1987, he could remember what even other people had said. Now he can't even remember what he said or where he was or what was this country where my son stole all that money? Was that Iraq, Iran, Ukraine? I'm not sure. What year was that that I was with Barack and we made a stop and he took several guesses, but he didn't know which one it was. But then we have Elizabeth Warren, and you got to say that at least she is original. Nobody has ever suggested that their education secretary would have to be approved by a transgender child until Elizabeth Warren. Let's play video clip number 8. She actually goes there.
Over and over. For my Secretary of Education, the first, it has to be someone who's taught in a public school. Hello?
No, because only public schools are real, right?
And part two, because it came from a young trans person who asked about a welcoming community. And I said, it starts with a Secretary of Education who has a lot to do with where we spend our money, with what gets advanced in our public schools, with what the standards are. And I said, I'm going to have a Secretary of Education that this young trans person interviews on my behalf. And only if this person believes that our Secretary or Secretary of Education nominee is who is committed to creating a welcoming environment, a safe environment, and a full educational curriculum for everyone, will that person actually be advanced to be Secretary of Education?
All right. Okay. Now, we began this segment, I think, by talking about how the New York governor wants to have anybody who wants to purchase a gun has to take a test to see whether or not they're sane. And this proposal by Elizabeth Warren, taking somebody who obviously has mental issues, a very young person who has been gaslighted by the system. I have to say, we need to have anybody who is running for president, at least as a Democrat, let's say that. Anybody who's running for president, as a they should take a sanity check. Maybe we should extend that to Republicans as well. Why not, right? Maybe we wouldn't have anybody running. No, you should have to take a sanity check, Elizabeth Warren, if you're going to do this. Apply the same standard that you do to a gun owner. Because, quite frankly, being president in the United States is a lot more dangerous than owning a gun, isn't it? And this is the level of insanity that this criminal totalitarian Elizabeth Warren has sunk to. She's going to let a trans child approve the next Secretary of Education. Forget about the fact that there isn't even any constitutional authority for the Department of Education created by Jimmy Carter. Now, Ronald Reagan said he's going to get rid of it. Welcome back. We have Richard Proctor coming on at quarter after. So he's going to be coming on in the third segment of the next hour. We'll talk about the Constitution. We'll talk about what's going on with impeachment. But, you know, I'd like to get your thoughts on what's going on with this, as it looks like it might wind up later tonight. They'll have a vote later this afternoon. They're going to start at 1 o'clock. They'll have closing arguments from both sides. That'll take about 2 hours each. And then about 5 o'clock Eastern time, they will have a vote as to whether or not they're going to call witnesses. We have now had one of the people that was being lobbied by Mitt Romney. He tried to get three other people to join him to turn this into a Kavanaugh-style hearing. One of them has now defected and says he's not going to vote to call more witnesses for an endless dog and pony show. Which means that the best that they can do is a tie, in which case then it will get interesting. So we'll talk to Richard Proctor about who gets to cast the tie-breaking vote in the Senate in an impeachment trial. Seems to me it ought to be Vice President Pence, but everybody's saying it's going to be Roberts, and you can never depend on anything that Roberts is going to do. I mean, that guy is a creature of the state, if ever there was one. But I want to get your take on this, as well as the coronavirus. I haven't taken calls for a little over a week, so we've got a couple of segments coming up, the rest of this segment, the one at the top of the hour and the first one in the next hour. And if you want to join the program and give me your opinion, that number is 888-201-2244, 888-201-2244. All right, before we go to any more news or calls, I just want to remind you about the products we have at InfoWarsStore.com, because as I've been talking about free speech and the fact that we have Democrat politicians like Adam Schiff and others in the House demanding that YouTube and Google and Facebook censor speech on specific topics, specific topics. You had Adam Schiff saying, you're going to shut down and demonetize and purge anybody that says anything about vaccines, right? And he did that about a year ago. And so now there's a group of physicians who are suing him over that. Maybe they're suing people who are doing the censorship as well. But then we had just a week or so ago, a Democrat doing the same thing on the issue of climate change. We had Dr. Mercola talking about the money behind NewsGuard and how it was being funded by big pharmaceutical companies who don't want you to hear anything about vaccines. This is what we're seeing here. It is people who are allied with it's the military-industrial complex, it's the government, it's people that the big pharmaceutical companies or other big business have bought, people like Adam Schiff and these others, who say, shut down any criticism of my product. And not only that, but Adam Schiff and these Democrats demand that you put forward their side of this without any opposition. And now we have Elizabeth Warren wanting to criminalize that. So this is what is happening everywhere. This is why it is so vital for you to keep the free press like InfoWars alive. And we were the first ones that they came after, because on every one of these issues, we give you the other side. And we're giving you why it is true. I don't just say this is my opinion. I give you reasons for it. Now, you may not agree with me, but don't you want to be able to have that discussion on all these different issues? And if you don't support us, folks, we will not be here. We've got some great specials right now at InfoWarsStore.com. We have our Prostaguard and Ultimate Fish Oil products have been out of stock. They're now back in stock and 35% off. We have Winter Sun, our vitamin D product, 40% off. And as I've said this last week, when you look at flu season, you know, all these people saying, well, you just need to get your flu shot and so forth, or we're going to have a vaccine ready for you for the coronavirus. No, you need to have an immune system that is working. That's going to be your best defense. Picking up your general health. The people who are vulnerable to the flu each year or a cold or complications from any number of diseases are people who are compromised with their health for a number of reasons. It could be people who are very young, people who are very old, people who have a certain type of disease, or they're on chemotherapy, something that compromises your immune system. So you want to be able to build that up. Winter Sun is a great way to do it. We've got a lot of other products that do that at InfoWarsStore.com. Winter Sun, 40% off. And finally, make sure that you are prepared with food, because as we're seeing this draconian measures taking place in China, it ought to ring bells with you like it does with me. When I look at the numbers, and I said it yesterday at the beginning of the program, and Gerald Celente came on, and he said the same thing, independent of what I had said. He hadn't heard what I had said. When you look at the small number of cases and the low percentage of people that they say of those cases that have died, it's much less than they typically tell you about the flu in general from the CDC. Now, I don't believe those flu numbers. I don't necessarily believe the numbers coming out of China. And if the numbers are that low coming out of China, why are they quarantining 50, 60 million people? Why are they enacting draconian measures? So a lot of people believe that they're lying about that. But you have to be concerned about the kind of draconian quarantines and controls that are someday going to be enacted here, with or without reason. All right, so take a look at the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. I see some people have joined. I want to go to some of our callers now who are waiting online. Let's go to Peter in Ecuador. You say your daughter has your daughter is traveling and you're worried about the coronavirus, or does she have the coronavirus?
No, she's traveling, returning to the U.S. from China.
Mm-hmm. Oh, from China. Bangkok was she in Wuhan?
Yeah. No, she was in another place called Zhongshan, which is toward pretty close to Hong Kong area, Macau. She actually exited through Macau. And so, yeah, we're watching it closely. She's doing the mask, which, of course, they say is not that effective. She's due, however, adding essential oils to the mask. And whenever she's touching anything, we got her, advised her to get a bunch of, latex gloves to wear as
keep
well.
Keep your hands clean. Yeah, and you know, one of the things you can do to keep your hands clean, water is a great thing. You know, it's that was the key thing that helped to cut down disease. But of course, you can also use nano silver. That will, you know, wipe that on your hands. That'll get rid of viruses as well as bacteria. That's always good to have. If you can.
Actually, we're looking at ordering the gargle, so it's waiting for her in the U.S. when she arrives, assuming she is allowed in. Mm-hmm. But as she left Macau, they did take her temperature, which, as we know, or we've heard from Mike Adams, that is not necessarily going to indicate that she's a carrier. She's actually been teaching English over there, and they called off the school, so she thought, why hang around there, and she wanted to come back. But, you know, it's interesting, David, I live down here in Ecuador, and I was inspired to move here, believe it or not, listening to Alex Jones and Mike Adams. Oh, and... 2009, if you can believe that.
Wow.
And I actually met Mike down here. We became neighbors for a brief time. But nonetheless, I run a little eco resort here, and I wanted to weigh in, too, on we get a lot of international travelers. So I just hosted a group of German tourists. And so once in a while, I like to lob a little grenade into the discussion and talk about Trump. But it is amazing, and you know, the Canadians are also very biased. But they're getting fed this thing on Trump, and it's comical to see how people have just been programmed. And so we'll talk, and they realize that I'm not totally insane. But anyway, it's an interesting thing that we are going through right now. I don't have any confidence in John Roberts. As you were, suspecting earlier, questioning. He's a total disappointment. But anyway,
wondering if they got something on him. You know, when you look at what happened with Obamacare, writing both opinions, saying, well, no, it's not constitutional, but hey, I got another idea. We could call it a tax. And then going with that, I mean, that was a last-minute switch, and it made many of us wonder if he is a compromised individual, they like, we see from the Jeffrey Epstein thing, we saw it from Dennis Astor, they like people in power that are compromised. As a matter of fact, Pete, I look at all this stuff about foreign aid and all the corrupt governments that we shower with money, and I think they want to do that to the corrupt governments more than they want to do it to a legitimate government, because those are the people that are going to do what they tell them to do.
Absolutely.
Kind of like what they do with Noriega. What does it take to go to Ecuador? I saw an article that in Uruguay, you can get in if you got $500,000, here in America, of course, you can get in. We'll pay you welfare. They're upset that President Trump is stopping that, right? If you're going to become a public charge, we're the only country that does that. We've got to go to break, but tell me, do they have any income requirements in Ecuador to get in?
Yeah, of course. And you can get in. There are a lot of ways, but $30,000 will a certificate of a deposit will get you residency. You want to hold?
See, that's it. Every country in the world but the United States. And they have a problem. President Trump says we got to do what every other country in the world does. We'll be right back. Thanks, Pete. Stay with us.
Analyzing the globalists' next move. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. We're taking calls this segment and the next, and then we're going to be joined by Richard Proctor, and we're going to talk about the Constitution. I was just talking to Pete in Ecuador. He's moved there, he said, in 2009 because of what Alex Jones and others were telling him, Mike Adams were telling him about the direction that we're going in this country. I don't think that he regrets it. And as I said, what does it take to move there? Because we got this article that just came out from MSN. If you got $500,000 in 90 days, well, Uruguay might let you become a citizen there. Right now, the qualifications are much higher. Right now, you got to spend twice that amount of time there, 183 days. And you've got to either buy real estate that is worth more than $1.8 million or invest $5.4 million in a business. But see, here in America, you can just come in with a green card and you can go on welfare and you can get free education. And you can not only get all of these benefits, you know, you can get benefits that are superior to American citizens living here. And when President Trump says we're going to do something about it, boy, the establishment goes nuts over that. They point out in this article that, you know, Portugal, Spain, Greece are all doing that type of thing. There's not a country in the world, however, they're starting to lower it to try to attract people. But, you know, in Portugal, you got to have $385,600 in property to qualify to go there. I know in Belize, you got to have, years ago, you got to have like $25,000. You got to have means of support for you and your family. Same thing in Spain and Greece. And so in Uruguay, what's making the news is they're thinking of taking it down from $2 to $5 million investment there in 180 days. They say, well, let's take it down to $500,000 in 90 days. But again, in America, we're supposed to supply you with the cash. There's not a country on earth that does that besides the United States. Let's go to Richard in Texas. Thank you for holding, Richard. Go ahead.
Morning.
Hello.
Morning. I wanted to make a quick comment about impeachment and then talk about coronavirus. I think the impeachment trial will end this afternoon, but I do agree with you on Roberts. One time I sent Congressman John Carter an email saying that I was going to sue his office if he didn't file articles of impeachment against Roberts. And then the next day, a congressman came out and said, you better do what we say, in reference talking to the Supreme Court justices over the air. So there's clearly something shady going on there.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I also hope that Trump does something about Barr or replaces him, because we have all these crimes that were uncovered and they're just sweeping them under the rug. So if it doesn't get addressed in the impeachment, then I really hope he does something to address.
Yeah, he's not looking much better than Jeff Sessions, is he?
No, he's not. I don't think he is at all. We all know all the stuff about Barr. But anyways, about coronavirus. I think I genuinely think it was a retaliation from the DOD for the Chinese actually stealing bioweapons from us and from Canada over the last few months.
Yeah, they have. I talked about that a couple of days ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
We just had an indictment, just to get everybody up to speed. We had an unsealed indictment, I think it was 2 days ago. A Harvard professor from 2012 to 2017, he was making $50,000 a month. They gave him $1.5 million. They gave him $150,000 for living expenses, $1.5 million to help set up a lab. And, of course, they opened that first biosafety level 4 lab there in Wuhan, and they opened it up in 2017. So they got him about lying, but they also had two Chinese people that were there, one of them an officer with the Chinese army, another one they caught smuggling stuff. And as you pointed out, Richard, that we had two people in Canada at their only biosafety level 4 lab caught sending stuff over. They're engaging in a bio warfare program. Very suspicious. We're running out of time. This segment, hang on, I cut you off. I want to let you finish your train of thought, Richard. And we got some other callers, and then we'll be joined with Richard Proctor in the segment after that. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. We're taking callers in this segment. Richard Proctor will be joining us in the next. And Richard in Texas was talking about how he believed that this was perhaps revenge from the Department of Defense because of Chinese espionage. And, of course, that's we just had one of those cases break this week. They also were engaged in espionage at Canada's only biosafety level 4 lab. Chinese people there were caught shipping material to China. Your take on all this, Richard?
Well, we know 100% that this particular strain of coronavirus was engineered. They sequenced the genome, and even Harvard said that there is no possibility that it occurred in the wild, that it was engineered. So that together with Trump's proclivity to take action when there's enemy combatants constantly harassing us. We saw what he did with Soleimani. We saw what he did with al-Baghdadi. I think Trump would have had no problem approving an equal measured strike against them, which is a non-lethal bioweapon. It primarily targets people that are low income, which is China, but it doesn't, it's not like Ebola where it's going to wipe out a whole population. It's a measured response that if you want to play with something that's as dangerous as bioweapons, will give you a little taste of what's possible with it. And that's why China is quarantining so badly, is because their healthcare system is not up to the standard. They have more immune compromised people because of their lack of nutrition and other things. And DOD obviously war games these things out. They know that if it spreads to the U.S., it'll likely only cause a few deaths, and it gives them the opportunity to enact the whole, vaccine oppression thing here and lock down the government and quarantine people and censor them on the internet. So no matter what, they win, and they're always looking at it from all these angles.
Yeah. There's a lot of different angles, and that is definitely a very strong possibility, what you're just talking about. And of course, another one, Richard, is that the fact that, as I reported, was it yesterday or 2 days ago, the ad that they had for more people to work in that biosafety level 4 lab, they have a biologist who's been specializing in Ebola, SARS, and coronavirus, and bats. And the fact that they started this whole thing about bat soup, another possibility is that maybe it got out of there by accident. They knew that that was a combination, and that was a cover story from the Chinese government. Third possibility is that the Chinese government, always doing beta tests for the globalists, these people who want to run a mass quarantine with draconian measures. I mean, that's every year they're simulating that. That's also another possibility. But yeah, the fact that this is payback for their espionage. The thing that I'm concerned about long term is this proliferation of these bio labs and bio warfare, and how many of these we've already got in the United States and how sloppy they are. But also the fact that this is becoming very widespread. I'm very concerned about that. Thank you, Richard. I want to get to some of the other people who are calling. We got Wayne in New Jersey, Johnny in Denmark. Let's go to Wayne in New Jersey. Go ahead, Wayne. Thank you for holding.
So, David, Wayne here. How you doing?
Doing good. Thank you.
Hey, I firmly agree with you and Richard on China and what's happening with the coronavirus. I believe it was weaponized. I don't believe it was a mistake. I believe that it's a way to control the people, to see how much the people can be controlled before they actually fight back. That's number one. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I think that's an important. That's a part of every one of these simulations. Every time that they do this on annual simulations, I pointed out yesterday, they bring all these people in, from the DOD, from all the intelligence agencies, all these health bureaucrats and so forth. And then they also bring in, you know, people who are elected officials in the administration, Congress, and they scare everybody about this. I played that clip from the 2018 war games and, say, hey, look, we got people in the White House and Capitol Hill, even in the Supreme Court, have been infected with this. And our problem, this thing got out of hand. They got all the news reports and everything. The thing got out of hand because we didn't clamp down big enough, fast enough. So we got to be more authoritarian and draconian in our approach to this. And the bottom line is these people selling vaccines like Bill Gates and running these simulations, their bottom line is you got to let us put out these vaccines without holding them up for tests.
100% agree. Now let's talk about Virginia. I believe Virginia was controlled also. I believe that the situation there was Richmond. Basically, those politicians were bought. It became Democratic. And what's happening out there, and I know Western Virginia very well, they love God, guns, and country. Mm-hmm. And I think that's another thing of control. I think that they're trying to force the Virginia population to fight back in some respect, to see how much they'll fight back as opposed to just laying down.
Yeah, well, I think the rise of the sanctuary city movement and the nullification of these laws, I think that would be the best thing that could happen, because we've already seen this with medical marijuana. 2/3 of the states have nullified an unconstitutional UN agenda about marijuana, and we need to start doing the same thing on all these other issues where the federal government has overreached its authority. But then, of course, the other part of this, which I would really like to see happen. I'd like to see some of those Western Virginia locations that are about God and country. I'd like to see them join West Virginia. You know, you had Jerry Falwell Jr. go and hold a joint press conference with the governor of West Virginia. It was a couple of weeks ago that you had legislators in the West Virginia House saying, look, we welcome anybody who wants to come and join us. And to make it clear that they were serious about it, you had the joint press conference, and both the governor of West Virginia, who made a legal case for it, and then said, you know, we kept this open and we were allowed to do this and you can do this. And it's part of our Constitution that anybody can join us at any time that they want. And now let me tell you why you would want to live here. This is a great place to live. Look at our economy and all this kind of stuff. The same thing that Falwell was doing. They were seriously pitching people to do it, you know, because, hey, we got a great economy here. Come join us. We got the same values that you do. What do you think about that?
So one other thing, I saw the Falwell Jr. thing. I thought it was impressive. I thought his speech was impressive. Hey, you could actually see a couple tears rolling down the guy's eyes. So you knew he was definitely there. I got one other thing to say. I'm from New Jersey. I believe everything you say. North Jersey, South Jersey, a lot different. I think South Jersey should actually succeed. Our gun laws, our governor, I mean, New Jersey is just getting insane. And
maybe people could join West Virginia, too. You know, it doesn't have to be contiguous. Look at Pakistan, right?
Yeah, that's it. So if we
could go to West Virginia,
too, it'd be great. Hey, thanks a lot, David.
Thank you. Thank you. Let's go to Johnny in Denmark. We've had a lot of foreign callers, Ecuador and Denmark. Thank you for holding, Johnny. Go ahead.
Hi, David.
Hi.
I'd like to start by greeting you. It's the first time I've called. I've been a listener for about 10 years and an intense listener for about 6 years. And when I say intense, I mean 6 to 14 hours a day.
Wow.
And I listen to all three shows. Sometimes some of them more than once, because sometimes, with all due respect, I have it as background. But, hey, better as background than not at all. I think you're doing a great job generally, and about the coronavirus pandemic or pseudo-pandemic particularly. And that's true for the InfoWars team generally. The six people I most wanted to hear from about this were Mike Adams, Nick Begich, Alex Jones, Steve Pachenik, and John Rappaport. And by the way, don't be slighted. I just took it in alphabetical order by last name. And the only one I haven't heard of about it from is Nick Begich, and I'm very interested to hear about it from Nick Begich, because I, like you, he what he offers to the team is a very panoramic perspective.
You know,
scientific, spiritual, etc. So I'd love to hear from him. I'm going to call later at Alex's show. He's been pretty good about getting me my calls answered. But I'd like to offer the following acronym that I formulated this morning for just to remind us.
Bree, we got about 45 seconds. I'll give you the floor, but I've got about 45
sure.
seconds. Go ahead.
About the pandemic hoaxes. And very aptly, the acronym is SLEAS. SARS, Legionnaires' Disease, Ebola, AIDS, Zika, and E. coli. And of the previous ones, the one it most resembles is the current one is AIDS, because it was supposed to be this AIDS pandemic. And I'm old enough to remember when it started. It was supposed to obliterate humanity. It was supposed to have, you know, an increasing growth curve. It didn't. And I mentioned this on the other two shows. It was a fantastic book written by Rebecca Goldshaw called Science Sold Out. Does HIV really cause AIDS? And here's a spoiler alert. It doesn't. And
that's a great acronym. Thank you, Johnny. That was a great acronym. SLEAS.
Part of the journey, I was looking at all the lights.
Welcome back. Joining us now is Richard Proctor. Always a pleasure to talk to Richard about the Constitution. Remember, he also has a book on economics. Bathroom Economics is the book title, and you can find that at bathroomeconomics.com. His book's on the Constitution. He has one targeted for kids. You should teach your kids about the Constitution before the government does. and teach them what is really in it. I don't know, but I don't know if they even bother with it anymore. But if they do, they'll probably tell them the wrong stuff. Constitution, If You Can Keep It, is one that he has for kids. And then he has a goes straight through the Constitution with commentary and background. It's called Saving the Constitution. That's for you. That's for you to save the Constitution. So you can find all that at bathroomeconomics.com. Thank you for joining us, Richard.
Yes, glad to be here.
Let's talk a little bit about what's going to happen with the impeachment trial. I'd like to get your take on, first of all, what do you think about it so far in terms of the process and how it lines up with the Constitution?
Well, that's very interesting the way you say this. There's only one reference to impeachment of the president. Well, there's two, I guess, the 25th Amendment. The Section 4 of Article 2 says the president and the vice president and other offices can be removed from office or shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. Now, we're not talking about treason and we're not talking about bribery here. We're talking about high crimes and other misdemeanors. What the heck is a high crime and a misdemeanor? I mean, how broad is that? We understand a high crime. High crime isn't necessarily a type of crime. It's the person who's doing the crime. I use the illustration of a minister and his flock. If one person in that goes out and commits adultery, well, one did. If the minister goes out, it's considered a high crime. Oh, my laws. He's the guy in charge. If the janitor does it, it doesn't make any difference. But if the CEO does it, it matters. That's the difference between a high crime and a non-high crime. But misdemeanors, wow, that really opens the door to most anything. The only thing I think is ought to be honest. I mean, if we're not honest, where are we? If we don't follow the rule of law, if we don't follow proper procedures, then where are we? This is a completely illegal kangaroo court because there's no proof of any wrongdoing.
Yeah, it seems like the fundamental thing that they've claimed is that aid was delayed, not that it wasn't even given. And of course, we've had situations, I pointed out earlier in the program, five times that Barack Obama delayed or denied aid to various countries. Some of them were politically motivated because he was pandering to a voting bloc within this country in terms of what he was doing abroad. And actually, it's more than five times because he's done it on the issue of abortion. He's done it on the issue of gay marriage and gay rights and so forth. In other countries, he's told him to do that. But he's also done it for defense issues as well. But, you know, this is just the delaying of foreign aid as if the president doesn't have the authority to make those kinds of policy decisions. And, of course, the Democrats never had a problem with Obama or any president doing that type of thing.
You know, you've got to go back to the basics. We're not supposed to be doing any foreign aid at all.
That's right. That's the other part I wanted
completely.
To ask you about. Yeah. Now, let's talk about the Constitution and foreign aid, because that was the thing that Rand Paul focused on. He goes, this is absolutely insane. Look at all the corruption in all of these foreign aid cases. I mean, talk about the Constitution and foreign aid.
Well, there isn't any. I mean, the Constitution doesn't allow for this stuff.
It's not
in any function. We're not allowed to go out, according to the Constitution, we're not allowed to go out and help anybody anywhere at all. The funds are for the operation of the United States government, its defense, and those, you know, and it's not for us to pander around the country, around the world, and try to buy people off to do things or not. Denying foreign aid is just going back to the way the Constitution says in the first place. It should all be denied. Since when
That's
are we
right.
taking our tax dollars or even borrowed tax money that we have that inflates the economy? Since when are we taking those things and giving it to other people? I mean,
that's right. I believe that if you're going to impeach the president over something over foreign aid, you would impeach him for giving it. But, of course,
yes.
It's not just him. It's every president. And it was authorized by the Congress, pretending that somehow is defense of this country to give money to corrupt foreign politicians,
well,
which is what
it
really is.
They put it in the budget, and the Congress passes the budget. So there the Congress is passing foreign aid. But it's still unconstitutional.
In fact,
Washington made a big thing about not entangling ourselves with foreign alliances. Well,
yes.
This is the part of it. We've got to, you know, we need to stop that. Taking our money, taking my money and your money, and that's how everybody should think, taking my money and giving it to somebody that's planning to kill me. Come on, stop it.
Yeah, and I think it was very telling that even as Obama was saying in 2010 at the UN, we've got to get rid of the corruption that follows the foreign aid and so forth. And as they started to apply that, Hillary Clinton was, no, you're not going to hold up any foreign aid to these other people, because we've got to understand that corruption is a two-way street. We give money to those people in foreign countries, those corrupt dictators, and they not only channel it into the Mercedes dealerships, but they also channel it back to some of our Washington politicians And I'm looking at the Clinton Foundation as well.
Yes, when I say they that. Do. They yeah. channel it right back to buying all of our politicians. It's done. Yeah. It's money is the money is creating the evil of our world. Not the love of money so much as the love of having it and using it to control and using it to harm other people. We
right.
do a big yeah. job of that.
Yeah, it's the love of money. You know, money in and of itself, you're right, is not evil. It's the love of it. But it is also, you know, when we look at, I just saw a movie this week about the Panama Papers that was produced by Netflix. And there's this long lecture at the end of it from Meryl Streep to the audience, you know, talking directly to the audience, telling us we've got to have campaign finance reform. The problem is there's too much power in Washington because we haven't restrained them with the Constitution. As long as they have this kind of power to spend and to tax and to do anything that they wish, of course the money is going to flow there.
Well, you know, if we just get back to the Constitution. Now, I know I'm just talking, I'm talking to the choir, and I also know I'm talking about something that is impossible. But let's get back to electing the president the way the Constitution says, and all that campaign problem goes away.
Yeah, that's
I mean,
right.
Just follow the Constitution. It all goes away.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
No new laws, just do what the Constitution says.
Look at the massive amount of money that's being spent just by Michael Bloomberg alone. As I point out, it's more than both parties and both candidates spent combined in 1996. But, you know, he's already spent that, and we haven't even had the first primary yet.
Yeah, it's amazing the money that was wasted in this popularity contest, this circus.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
Billions and billions of dollars is wasted in a circus that's just trying to choose the best looking guy, or the guy who'll give us the most, or the guy who'll say the best things and he says the best things differently in every congregation, or I don't mean congregation, let's say setting. Every
yeah.
setting, he says a different thing to appeal to that audience than he does in another audience, and it's all a popularity contest, and it's all fiction.
And what scares me is that what has become most popular is for the government to have all power, unrestrained, and for it to use that power to shut down our God-given rights. And that's really what the Democrat Party has become. We see Elizabeth Warren saying she's going to criminalize disinformation as she judges disinformation. When we come back, Richard, I want to talk about the process itself and John Roberts' position in this process.
Analyzing the globalist's next move. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. We're talking to Richard Proctor. You can find his books on the Constitution and economics at bathroomeconomics.com. And I wanted to ask Richard about the actual trial process, more specifically about what may happen later this afternoon. Now, here's the scenario that has played out. We had a move by Mitt Romney to get three other senators to join him so they would have 51 votes to call for witnesses and drag this trial out further. Mitt Romney got Susan Collins, but he didn't get Lamar Alexander. And so that means that if he gets Lisa Murkowski from Alaska, who has still not said how she's going to vote, it would be a 50-50 tie. Now, if she goes the other way, that's it. They will say no witnesses, and they will likely then move too quickly to have a vote, because that would be basically the end of it. If they have witnesses, it's going to drag on for quite some time. But the question is, what if Lisa Murkowski goes with Mitt Romney and wants to have more witnesses? Then they have a 50-50 tie. And we're told that Chief Justice John Roberts, because he is the presiding officer over this trial, that he, and not the vice president, will cast the deciding vote. Richard, what do you think about that in terms of the Constitution?
In terms of the Constitution, this is what it says exactly, okay? We're in Article 1, Section 3, Paragraph 4. The vice president of the United States shall be president of the Senate, but shall have no vote unless they are equally divided. So, if they're equally divided, 50-50, the vice president has a vote, period.
Yeah, Yeah, exactly. What does it say about the Supreme Court justice coming in?
Not one thing.
Know?
He doesn't have any authority there whatsoever except to try to shall we say, preside over the trial. He doesn't have anything to say more than that.
Mm-hmm.
That's his job. No more than that.
Yeah. I agree. That's the thing that has amazed me from the very beginning. I heard somebody saying that on one of the network broadcasts, and I thought, oh, they just don't know what's going on. And then everybody started saying it. It's like, oh, what is, where did they, just making this stuff up, aren't they, as usual?
Yes, we just make it up. We get some kind of a direction, the wind, the way the wind is blowing, and then somebody just makes something up, and they say it, and if you repeat a lie often enough, it becomes the truth. Or you repeat a rumor often enough, it becomes the truth. Anything repeated over and over and over again becomes the truth. But the truth is, the vice president has the vote when they're equally divided. And that's it. It's done. Paragraph 4 of Section 3, Article 1.
And I have to say that I think one of the reasons that they're doing this, and now we're getting into political opinion and analysis. I mean, the hardcore facts in the Constitution is that if the Senate is divided, then the vice president catches a limo or an Uber, and he comes over to the Senate and he casts the deciding vote, right?
Yes.
So, you know, that is what should happen. Why is this happening? In my opinion, Richard, I think this is happening because they know that Roberts is a reliable switch hitter. They can always call on him in a pinch, and he will switch sides. He typically will vote, you know, kind of quasi-establishment Republican, but when they really need him, they can get him to go. And we saw that happen with his throttling of Rand Paul, and we've seen it happen in the past, the way he switch hit on Obamacare. We've seen him flip on the idea as to whether, you know, how the bureaucracies ought to operate in terms of their oversight and so forth. So he's been there. You know, he'll vote on one side, you know, in a previous ruling, and then he'll flip and vote on the other side if the statists don't have enough votes. And I think that's really why this is being done this way.
This is, you remember we talked about money a few minutes ago?
Yeah.
There's people in the back paying money or making threats to make sure people do what they want done.
That's
They murdered a chief justice, or they murdered the Supreme Court justice not too long ago. And that was there's the key. Look what happened to him. Now you pay attention.
That's right. Yeah. Anybody that thinks that they don't have politicians in place because they're blackmailable, hasn't been paying attention to what happened with Dennis Hastert.
That's right.
And I haven't been paying attention to what the whole purpose of the whole Epstein trafficking and prostitution thing was.
All of it.
Yeah.
It's just money, bribing and lying and cheating and threatening. I mean, it's just a bunch of, well, never mind.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's exactly what's happening. Well, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And folks, when you watch this, just remember that if they have a 50-50 tie, and that is likely to happen because, you know, we've had some very pointed questions from Lisa Murkowski as to, well, why not? Why shouldn't we just continue this on forever with witnesses and so forth? If it turns out, if she goes with Mitt Romney, it'll be 50-50, and they will let John Roberts make the deciding vote here instead of Vice President Pence, which is what the Constitution says.
Completely unconstitutional.
Yeah.
Who cares about the Constitution? That's just something we swear we're going to abide by, then we throw it in the trash until the next time we have to swear an oath.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's what's going on. That's why I wrote the book. That's why I wrote the book, so that the people would know, you know, that would like to read a book about this, the people would know what it says. That's why I wrote it. It's not hard. If you just go through the paragraphs one at a time, you can see it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the reasons I think they want to get rid of President Trump, many reasons, you know, he has proposed things like we were talking about earlier today, the idea that in this country, and we're not even talking about people who are refugees, because, you know, in many cases, refugees are going to come with nothing but the shirt on their back. But people are coming in here with green cards. We're the only country that has been saying, you know, well, you don't have to have any money. You can come in here and live off of the public. You can become a public charge is the phrase that they use.
I would say the real phrase there, David, is we're the only country with no borders.
Yeah, exactly.
No borders.
Yeah. And we're seeing that the wall that has been built just collapsed. I don't know if you saw that picture. The border has literally collapsed, and you can see the border wall falling over. And then a report coming out from Border Patrol saying they just found the longest tunnel they've ever found. It was 4,000 feet long and going way into Tijuana and coming across the the California border. But it's the trafficking, and again, it's the money that is involved in that.
Oh, it's all money. Yes. If we didn't have so much desire for drugs, a lot of this would stop.
Yeah.
I mean, it's money. It's money.
Yes.
It's terrible. I like to concentrate on the Constitution because that's a fact.
I think one of the things that has exacerbated all this stuff, and I look at it just like I do with alcohol prohibition, the alcoholism problem got a lot worse during alcohol prohibition.
Yes,
at least I had the respect for the Constitution. But, you know, from a practical standpoint, the violence that we're seeing in Mexico, and it is horrific. Now that things have wound down a little in the Syrian war, more people are being killed in Mexico, and yet we still cannot summon the will to protect our border. But that's being fed by this whole war on drugs. You know, we've created, just like we did with Al Capone, we've created these drug cartels with drug prohibition. Now they're branching out into all kinds of stuff. Now that we have these massive criminal organizations, they're branching out even into avocados. Now, are we going to ban avocados?
Yeah, well, that's the pattern. It's called the nose and the tent flap. I think I've mentioned that before. I mean, the nose and the tent flap, the camel takes over the tent, but just by little bit at a time. Just a little bit at a time.
That's right.
It's the same thing that a little bit of evil, and then a little bit more and a little bit more. You can see it in the movies. That's how this is always done. A little bit of encroachment. It's called the, I can't say the word, Hegelian. I can't say the word, but it's the idea.
Hegelian dialectic. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Here's your two choices. Pick one of those. It's like, wait a minute. Those aren't the only two choices out there, are they?
Yeah, well, they pick something. The guys start with something that's way out in left field. And, I want to have this. No cars, no drivers. We can't have drivers anymore. And the other people say, well, you know, we don't want drivers, so there's a compromise. But it's always a compromise towards where the no drivers is. So the compromises always seem to inch their way towards evil. They don't inch their way towards the good. They inch their way towards evil. So everybody says, let's compromise. What that really means is let's just inch our way towards evil.
All right, we got to take a quick break here, Richard. When we come back, I want to get your take on the talk about Western Virginian counties joining West Virginia, and also when we look at the possibility of massive quarantine. Welcome back. We're talking to Richard Proctor. I want to talk to him about the constitutional aspects of a couple of big items in the news. We've been talking about impeachment and what may happen with that. But I want to talk about what could possibly happen in Virginia. You know, we've had the sanctuary state movement, nullification. We've had talk of secession. And then also, when we look at what is happening in China, it raises the issue of forced quarantine and even forced vaccination. That would require, I guess, martial law if they were going to do something like that. But, of course, they don't really pay much attention to the letter of the law anymore. So we'll talk about all those coming up here. But, by the way, folks, if you want to protect yourself against that type of thing, because I'm far more concerned about a martial law scenario and forced quarantine, that's why I want to make sure that I have storable food so I don't have to be swept up into that. And, of course, the supplies that we have of this, we've been told by our supplier that we private label InfoWars Life Select Storable Food from. We get it from My Patriot Supply, and they said that they have accelerated this, but they are still concerned about supplies in the next few weeks. They say that you need to order now if you want to get it within 7 to 10 days. You can go to InfoWarsStore.com. You can look at emergency survival foods, and you'll see all the different sizes of food that you can buy, you know, for, you know, how many days or weeks that you want to have a backup supply of food. And remember, this is going to last for 25 years. So hopefully nothing is going to happen with this, but you'll still be prepared. You'll be prepared against any kind of an economic shock or shortage that comes through the system. And we have extremely fragile, just-in-time delivery within our infrastructure that everybody underestimates. And so to prepare now for the worst, you can do that at InfoWarsStore.com. And you can also help to support the free press here at InfoWars, because everything that we do is funded by the products that we sell at InfoWarsStore.com. Also, Winter Sun, our vitamin D formula, very important for your immune system. That is now in stock, 40% off. We have Ultimate Fish Oil and Prostagard now back in stock and 35% off many different products that will help your immune system, help your health to make sure that if this is a, you have a real health issue, you're going to be in the best possible shape to survive that. Take a look at the products we have at InfoWarsStore.com. We really do appreciate and need your support. All right, Richard, let's go with the Virginia situation at first. Let's take a look at what's going on with this. We've had a lot of people, state and within the state of Virginia, a lot of counties, a lot of cities, jurisdictions. It was over 130 the last time I looked, saying we're not going to embrace these gun confiscation rules coming out of Virginia. And they're still moving ahead with these in spite of the big number of people who went to the Capitol. They're moving rapidly ahead with gun control issues and so forth. And it's not just gun control. It's forced vaccination. It's other rules on speech that they're trying to criminalize and so forth. So when you have a situation like that, you know, and you have the right when they're taking, you know, the government is not protecting your rights, but trying to destroy your God-given rights. You have the not only the right, but the duty to alter or to abolish that government by declaring your independence and associating yourself with a different government. What do you think about the talk of secession, and what do you think about nullification in Virginia?
Well, no, let's go back and let's do this in order, okay?
Okay.
In order, you were talking about of the counties and the people wanting to associate with the other state. For example, territories or counties in Virginia wanting to go to West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Constitution. Let's go back to that. Section 3, Article 4. Article 4 is really about how states are supposed to interact with each other in the Union. New states may be admitted to the Union by Congress. Okay, that's the beginning. Then it comes down. Nor any state be formed by the junction of two or more states or parts of states without the consent of the legislatures of the states concerned, as well as that of Congress. So, if these counties want to belong to West Virginia, they have to get permission from their state legislature and the state legislature of West Virginia and the Congress. Never happened.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so, that's not likely to happen.
Yeah, so in constitutional terms, they can't do it, but there's nothing to keep them from moving.
Yeah, that's true. They can move themselves. Yeah, just if they could keep their businesses and their homes and just move themselves politically, that would be the easier thing to do. But according to the Constitution, that would be a problem. And then, of course, there is nullification.
Nullification usually means nullify something the federal government is doing that is not in accordance with the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution. And the mm-hmm. states can do that. Any state can do that anytime they want.
Mm-hmm. With the power of the, this is not getting into the Constitution, but with the power of the sheriff and the local government, they could refuse to enforce these laws that are coming out of Virginia, right?
We've seen
the Attorney General under Obama say, I'm not going to enforce the immigration laws. They called it DACA.
Yeah, but the sheriffs can't. So we're not going to enforce unconstitutional laws. We never do anything that's unconstitutional. And that's mm-hmm. correct and absolutely right.
That's right. Yeah. They're not just defying a law as, you know, and that's the distinction between the sanctuary cities in terms of immigration and the sanctuary cities that would support the Second Amendment. They are saying, no, we're standing with the Constitution, whereas the people who are saying we're going to have a sanctuary city over the issue of immigration, they're standing against the Constitution.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. The two things are diametrically opposed. We've got a Constitution that says we have certain inalienable rights. Okay, that's mm-hmm. done. I mean, that's the Declaration of Independence, of course, but the Constitution is enforcing those rights. So mm-hmm. if a state, not a state, a county, wants to say, we're going to follow the Constitution, then they have the perfect right to do that. It's given in our foundation documents. But if they say we're going to go against the Constitution, they do not have the right to do that.
All right, so let's talk. So it's going to be a problem for them if they want to move politically to West Virginia because the Democrats in Richmond are not going to be happy about that.
They won't allow it. So that's why they won't have. They won't allow it because they want to keep their control where they've got the power they've got. But
and we know that the Democrats in Congress will stand with them as well, and the judges will make a screaming case out of that as well. Even though the West Virginian government, the governor, as well as people in the legislature are begging them to do it. Let's talk about the concern right now with the coronavirus as we look at this. If you have a situation as we've seen in China, tens of millions of people, at least 60 million was one figure that came out. Forced quarantine, and of course, following that up, a forced vaccination without your informed consent. And that's happening all over the country now anyway, over a fear and uncertainty and doubt over measles, for example. And I see this coming eventually as a war game, these biowarfare scenarios, forced quarantine, forced vaccinations under the Constitution. What would that require?
Well, the Constitution doesn't allow the taking away the right of people for their own private property. I mean, mm-hmm. your body is your own private property. And the Fourth Amendment gives you power over your private property. It gives you the power, not the government, you the power. So they can't compel you, unless, of course, they have a gun in front of you, they can't compel you to take a vaccine. I mean, they can do all they want for regulation, but they can't compel anybody to take it. They can prevent you from going somewhere if you don't have one, because that's the private property of somebody else. If that mm-hmm. person doesn't want you to go there, and the government has its property, we see the schools, for example, as government property, whether we should or not, we do. And so they can say, you can't come here if you haven't done that. They can do that, but they can't make you take the vaccine.
And so it comes down to what we see all the time, which is the authority to do something versus the raw power to compel you.
Yes, right? That's right. Those are the two things. The gun is the raw power, and they can show up at your house anytime with a gun, say, we're going to shoot you if you don't. Now you have a choice, get shot or do it.
And we're all familiar with the government doing that far too often. That seems to be the MO of our government. It's not an appeal to authority or to the Constitution. It's just do it or else.
Yep, that's what they do. That's what they do. We've had a lot of instances of that. There's a plethora of people that have lost their lives because they said that you can't do that to me and I'm not going to let you. So they.
Oh, yeah. I remember the early days of the homeschooling movement. Had homeschooling parents being killed. Not because the government had the authority, but because they had the power. You know, power comes out of the barrel of a gun, as Mao said, and now we have something that is essentially a Maoist government in this country.
And that will lead. Now somebody asked me the other day, they said, do you think we could get out of this without a civil war? And that particular individual did not think we would get out of this without bloodshed. And I tend to agree with him, because when they come at you with a gun, you're going to do this. Somebody else will come with a gun, I ain't going to.
And that's right. That's why they want to take the guns. That's why they're so intent on doing that. Why they're openly talking about it now. Thank you so much. Always interesting to talk to Richard Proctor, and you will find his books on saving the Constitution at bathroomeconomics.com. That's it for today's broadcast. One more thing. Judicial supremacy must be destroyed.